What's up? I'm Tony, and welcome to the Real Spotlight Podcast, a place where you can hear me talk films and TV with a guest or on my own. The main topic of this episode will be all about the ongoing strike for actors and writers. Let me introduce my guest, who honestly doesn't need an introduction. He's one of the hardest working writers, interviewers, podcast hosts. It's Mr. Gaius Bowling. How are you, Gaius?
What is up? I'm great. Thank you for having me. I know we've been talking about me getting on your show for a little bit, so I'm excited to do it. I had you I had you on twice I think before, yeah. Right, and then one episode died. It had a technical boo-boo, but then we actually did another one together that actually went really well. I still feel bad about the technical boo-boo one, though. I was like, damn, that sucks. But
no, we did it was a good episode. We're talking about Signs, the 20th,
yeah,
the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, it was really good, and at least we got to know that we could have a conversation. It would go well. I just felt bad that, like, you know, as some people might know listening to these things, sometimes things go really well when you're recording, and then sometimes there's things that happen that are beyond your control.
Yeah, and then the second time I came out, we were talking about trailers, and
yeah, one of them was Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, Cocaine Bear, Indie, and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
For this episode, I wanted to cover the SAG-AFTRA strike, and for those who don't know the meaning of SAG, SAG is the Screen Actors Guild, and AFTRA stands for American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. So I have a few notes here. The last time the writers and actors went on strike at the same time was in 1960. Ronald Reagan was president of SAG. Yeah. It's actually happened a few times. In 2007, there was a strike that lasted 100 days. But before we get into all that, because I have a ton of questions for you, and I know you have all the knowledge here. Let me ask you, you have a passion for movies and television. When did that passion begin?
That started pretty early. Like, when I was a kid, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I told, you know, I told the story of my mom a lot, because at least she was very supportive early on, where I was like, hey, I either want to write movies or I want to write about movies. I just want to be somewhere in that entertainment field, no matter how I can really get into it. So then I went to LA Film School. I was in a screenwriting and editing program. It's like in Hollywood. And I learned a lot doing it, but then I had a buddy that was like, hey, like, while you're doing that and, you know, kind of honing your craft, like, if you want to try to make money, you should probably get into, you know, see if you can break into entertainment journalism. And I was like, well, I don't have a journalism background, so I don't know if I could do that. But he was like, you know enough about, like, he was like, you're reading fucking Entertainment Weekly when you're like a kid. Like, you know enough about this where you can, like, you can really do it. So while I was going to school there, I kind of learned a little bit about that. And that's how I started G Reels, which is like the Instagram page that I run. It started there, and it started as like a hobby. Wasn't supposed to have anything come of it. I had a few friends that were like, why are you doing this if you're not getting paid for it? I was like, oh, whatever, I just love it.
Yeah,
and I got in at the right time where there weren't a ton of pages doing it when I started, and I got a sponsorship pretty early on. And then once I hit 10,000 followers, there was a area where there could be money made from it. So I actually basically, you know, from the moment I started, I treated it like it was a job, and then eventually it became a job in and of itself. And then that opened the door for me being able to write for different publications. It started with Real Talk Inc., which is now the cinematic reel that David Gonzalez runs. I wrote for them for a little bit. And then I hopped on to Joe Blow. And then from there, I was like, wait, I mean, even though you feel like you're working full time, I was still considered freelance. So I was like, I want to be able to learn from like other places, but I can get other writing jobs at different publications. I'm going to do it. After a few years with them, I was like, you know, I'm just going to put my feelings out there and see what happens. So then
when you started, were you writing a lot of for free, basically?
In the beginning, Real Talk Inc. was definitely for free. But the good thing about it is that you have your own byline, like all your stuff's out there on the internet. So like when you do want to go for a job that is paid, at least you have professional kind of
resume,
example.
Yeah.
Resume. So like the thing about Instagram, because like there wasn't really a space for like as a reviewer on your Instagram, they're like, oh, that's not really like a publication. Now I think it's kind of changed where like the influencers on there, especially in the rise of like reels and video on that platform, they're able to kind of use it alongside like YouTube and all that other stuff to make it a viable place to report and write reviews. But at the time, it really wasn't. They were like, hey, you have to write for a publication if you want to be able to go to certain things. So thankfully now I write for a living and can make money off of it and live off of it. And it's pretty nice.
What were you doing before you started like the G Reels? Like for work?
So I actually still kind of in this business. I was working the first restaurant I ever worked at. I was a server and I did that for like 4 years and then started doing like freelance editing while I was going to film school. So like I would edit different people's projects for, you know, not school projects, but like actual professional projects and stuff, and was getting paid for that. And that did pretty well for a little bit. But then I needed something more consistent while I was trying to grow G Reels and, you know, trying to grow that brand and try to become a paid writer. So then I started working at another restaurant, which I am still at, and I'm actually a manager there. I do our marketing for that restaurant. Yeah, once I got more jobs and more stuff to do, I was like, I got to gradually cut this down a bit. But I do like being there, and it's fun to sell the restaurant and, you know, be responsible for us making money. That feels good. so
right now you have the Back to the Blockbuster podcast. Is there another one or my?
No, you're right. It's so it's Back to the Blockbuster, and then built within that, we do a bi-weekly spinoff called Back to the Blockbuster Presents Deep Dives with Owen and Gaius. And Owen is my buddy that I started the podcast with. Yes, and and he left for a little bit because, you know, doing the weekly podcast news thing is hard. I mean, it feels like it's going to be easy in the beginning, but like everything constantly changes and you have to be hard, on top of everything. Yeah, so I wanted him to come back, and like he really enjoys like kind of dissecting movies and you know, kind of getting into one and getting to the ins and outs of them. So that's kind of what we made the bi-weekly spinoff about, and it's, you know, every other week. The schedule works out great for him, so it's cool that like my best friend gets to be involved in it again. And then we got Jackson on the main show, who I've actually never met in person, but he lives in Canada, and he's been on the show with us since January. So it'll be like 7 months that he's been on the main show, grinding along with us. So it's been nice. Like the beginning of the year, I think the show, even though we've been doing it for almost 2 years, it felt like a new thing again.
No,
getting
I think
him on and then doing it.
I think the way that you incorporated him was great, because you guys have a flow now very early on with him. And yeah, it's just kind of like every episode is seamless. You would think he was a part of that for a few years now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess the biggest compliment I can give, like what you said, is they're like, it feels like you guys have known each other much longer than you have, and that you actually like kind of interact on the day. I mean, we do interact, but like it's different, you know, over Instagram and like Zoom. Like we're not in person, we don't hang out.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, still involved in like day-to-day parts of our lives though, where he's like, oh, what's going on here? And I'm like, oh, what's going on there? So yeah, it's good. And it feels seamless. And probably one of the best things that's happened for us was getting him on.
So before we talk about our main topic, let's just talk about the first half of 2023. Not a big conversation. Just right now, what's your favorite film of the year?
Oh Jesus, I gotta really think about that. What's come out in 2020? I'm trying to think of all the things that have come out in 2023. Nothing like in particular really like stands out as like particularly great. I'm trying to think of like what are some of the stuff that you really liked in 2023?
So like my top five right now is 5-1 is Bo is Afraid, Blackberry,
oh, there you go,
Polite Society, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And Rye Lane is number one for me as of right now. And of course, This week is huge. We have Oppenheimer, Barbie, all that crazy
big
stuff
weekend,
coming up.
Big weekend.
I have MI7 and number six, and that just came out last week.
I actually just watched Bo is Afraid. I really liked it. I got to tell Jackson about that because he loved it. I know that was like that movie's a bone of contention for like a lot of people.
I literally stopped the first time I was watching. I'm like, okay, what the freak am I watching? And then I go, okay, it was like late, and I go, bro, I need to stop here and then rewatch. So I restarted it the next day, and I go, okay, here we go. This is a fever dream. This is crazy. I forgot Ari Aster, and you know, Joaquin Phoenix is just, you know, an amazing actor. So I really enjoyed it, but some people just absolutely hate it.
Hated it. Yeah, I really enjoyed Air. I thought Air was really good because I wasn't expecting a lot.
That wasn't my number seven.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I also really liked How to Blow Up a Pipeline. I thought that was really good.
Bro, you just named my number seven, my number eight.
Oh, cool. Well, there we go. It was funny because I went to that screening not really expecting much. It was like a last minute thing. And I didn't know about the source material or anything like that. I was like, all right, I'm just going to go. I saw one trailer for it and thought it looked pretty interesting. And thought I mean, it was
really good. Right off from the bat, that music gets you into thriller mode of just like your heart is pumping. Like you know stuff is going to go on. You know this is going to be suspenseful. And I thought it was great. And I have number for, let me just round it off. My number nine is You Hurt My Feelings. But Julia Dreyfus. And number 10, I have Reality.
I haven't seen that.
Sydney Sweeney. It's a very short movie. I mean, I think
it was on the HBO.
Yeah, I think it's like 80 something minutes. But I think it mostly takes place in one room, one house. But I've never watched Euphoria. I hadn't watched White Lotus. So I had no idea of like her acting abilities.
Yeah.
And I thought she was really good in this movie.
Yeah, she's pretty solid. I mean, out of the Euphoria people, other than Zendaya, she's broken out a lot. She's going to be big beyond this show. I mean, it's going to be a while until we get season three because of the writer's strike now. But
I thought I read something that wasn't a season three, or is that just speculation?
So they renewed it for season three, and they were supposed to already be up. There's supposed to be a time jump anyway because you know the cast is getting a little older, and they were going to explain it that way. It was supposed to start shooting sometime in 2024. But then they released a story a couple of days ago that depending on how much longer the strike lasts, that they probably won't be able to start it until 2025. And it's just like at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you really want it that far out, but it's just.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I don't right. Like as of this moment, I don't know what the big TV shows are going to have the big delays. Like what's a show right now that you're like, God damn, I'm gonna have to wait till next year, 2025, because of the strike?
Well, I mean, just immediate kind of what's going to happen with the strike. And I'm only naming, I don't really watch a lot of network TV, but I love Abbott Elementary. I think it's one of the best comedies on TV right now. So most network TV shows, their writer's rooms usually start in May, or even a little earlier than that sometimes. But because the writer's strike started in May, no writer's rooms. So that means usually when there's a writer's room in May, by the time the actors come in and start shooting in August, there's like a few scripts written already and then they can shoot. Well, now there's a writer's room, but now the actors are also on strike. So the fall TV season is not going to start when it normally would. Usually it would start around September.
Yeah.
I read today that CBS is compensating by showing like episodes of Yellowstone on their schedule to compensate for the lack of like stuff on their schedule. You're going to get a lot of reality TV probably. That's what happened in 2007, 2008. That was like the rise of the Kardashians and The Apprentice during the last
I also saw an article of somebody writing, here's the comeback for the WWE, or wrestling is going to come back huge now.
It could be because like those shows, like even though they're popular, but they're not entirely expensive for the network. So they'll double down on that. And if they don't have any content to put on, they will. And that's the same thing with reality TV. I mean, we're getting the Golden Bachelor. I saw a trailer for that too, where like they have a 71-year-old dude in the bachelor position now going for age-appropriate women, of course. Like they have been talking about doing that for a while, and I guess now they're
like 50, 60 years old.
That
would be kind of creepy with a 20-year-old.
I know. Really very odd.
You know, this strike is going to affect the writers and the actors, but now that we live in this social media world with TikTok and Instagram, Twitter, and everybody and their grandma has a page and they're a content creator, like how does that affect them? Because I know a lot of them now, like yourself, like you can write, you can do stuff and get paid for it. But like those big people on TikTok who literally are in every freaking red carpet, they're interviewing Tom Cruise, they're getting paid, doing this. Like, how does that affect them?
So this was like a big thing on Twitter the last couple of days, especially trying to navigate, I guess, the rules for them. Because some of them they're not members of SAG, but if they want to parlay that and get into acting and want to join the union, then they can't really do anything to promote someone's project if it has what they call like a struck company, basically. So if an actor or a studio, if influencer is like, hey, like go see blah, 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 because they received some kind of merchandise or something for saying go see X, Y, and Z. They can get in trouble with that for that because you're promoting it and you're also getting compensated, but not compensated in a way where that's why some people were trying to call journalists scabs because they were writing about movies during the strike. But they're like, I work for a publication and my job is to review movies. I'm not being paid to give said movie a good review. I'm being paid to
They're getting paid by the New York Times. They're not getting paid by a studio or whatever.
Right. So that was a big, like, one of the girls, there was a girl online that was saying, you know, she works for a legit publication and two of her friends do as well. And she said that she couldn't get a screening for Barbie at all, but a ton of influencers were able to, because that's who they were trying to cater to. And I think, and this was pre, like, the strike happening, right? So, like, a lot of movies, knowing that this was coming, got a lot of their promotional stuff done early because they knew they wouldn't be able to do it once the strike started. And but that has created this big question about, like, who is a content creator? How is it different from a journalist?
But wouldn't studios want those influencers and kind of to influence them into giving them good praise for their movies? Because if you pluck out somebody from TikTok or Instagram, hey, I'm going to invite you to the red carpet, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to LA. This movie is garbage, but fuck it, I'm just going to say it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, because I want to get invited to the next party or the next red carpet. I mean, it's probably a win-win for those studios, but I've seen a lot of people on TikTok. I know there's this guy, Straw Hat Goofy. I guess he got in trouble saying that, I don't care, I'm not a part, I'm just going to keep talking. I'm under contract. And so people are kind of giving him
shit.
People are giving him shit. And but I did read that also, if you wanted to become, like you said, a union person or SAG, and you're doing this, they might, if they see you promoting said struck company, they might refuse you.
Still. Yeah,
to become a member in the future. So you have to think about that. And I think SAG or somebody, they put out the outline or the questions or for people to see, because people are like, we're confused. Like, what can we do? Can we do this? Who's a creator? Who's a journalist? And there's like a billion people with a billion different opinions about it. And you're like, who do you believe?
And you actually have people that like feel the need that they have to explain themselves because so many people were attacking legit journalists on Twitter and stuff, basically saying that they weren't supporting the strike by continuing to review and write about movies. But, you know, they're like, hey, this is a little bit different from what you think it is. Also, if they had to explain when they I saw people posting junket interviews that they clearly shot 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But then having to explain when they posted them, like, hey, I know this is for a movie that's coming out next week, but this was shot.
A disclaimer. By the way,
basically like that. Yeah. And then having to explain, like, you know, in their thing on their Twitter, like, hey, I was under contract before. Like, if you're under contract for something as a job before this happened, apparently you were allowed to fulfill that contract. They're not going to tell you, like, oh, you can't do it. But if it's anything post the strike, you're not able to. But yeah, everyone's really like explaining themselves so they don't get called out from a lot of random people, too. It's not some of the people like attacking journalists and stuff aren't even in the know. They just are assuming that they know something and they don't. I mean, there are content creators that get paid in other ways other than like getting paid from their publication. Like the studio is sending them swag and stuff like that. And that's how they're able to go to like a red carpet premiere. And real journalists do feel some kind of way about it because they're like, hey, like, doesn't that kind of ruin the integrity of like the profession? But if there's no denying that these content creators are important to some of these studios because they do get the word out in a big way and they have a big following, usually most of them.
Yeah.
I take it with a grain of salt. I mean, when we talked about our podcast, when we were talking about the early reactions for Barbie, and I told Jackson, I was like, just so you know, like that first like screening wasn't a ton of critics. It was a bunch of like influencers. He's like, oh, then I want to wait and hear from like actual like movie reviewers.
When it comes to big movies I want to see, I don't read anything. Like, I don't want to read anything about Oppenheimer and Barbie because it kind of skews you and overhypes you. Like, if you see all these infos, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, look at Flash. It was supposed to be the greatest comic book movie ever.
It's the Dark Knight.
And then it's just, you know, ridiculous. But when it comes to these two movies that are coming up, I'm going to be like, you know what? I don't want to hear anything. I'll go in and I'll see for myself. Because I've been bit in the ass way too many times.
The Flash was the last one to bite me in the butt. So I mean, like I should have known too, because it was coming out of like CinemaCon, and I was like, well, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that get invited to that are people who are fans of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I should have known that early reaction was more skewed. But
James Gunn was one of the people that said
Tom Cruise allegedly said something about the movie too.
He probably doesn't even know what it was. He's like,
I don't even think he watched it.
He's just a fan of cinema. The movies.
He's like, whatever saves the movies. Like, I'll say what I need to say.
And speaking this is just random here, but I was speaking of Tom Cruise. I just saw that MI7 made what, 80 million or was it
80 million? 80 million in its first 5 days. So they had a weird like Wednesday opening because it needed to take advantage of the IMAX screen. So it's losing them this weekend because of Oppenheimer. And Oppenheimer has them for three weeks because Christopher Nolan gets like an exclusive 2 week window because he shot with IMAX cameras, and they gave him an extra week because he's Christopher Nolan. So he got three. So, I mean, a lot of people were harping on the 3 day opening for MI7 because it comes in at like 56 if you just count the Friday to Sunday, but it opened at like 235 worldwide. So, I mean,
I think it's an amazing action film. I think it's, the last four MI movies have been insanely entertaining and groundbreaking for me. But do you think this has Top Gun Maverick? Like, you know how Top Gun just kept making money.
The legs and all that.
Yes.
No, I don't. And I think some people thought that Shine would rub up on this. I think the Mission Impossible franchise, even though it's highly successful, it's always been kind of like, it's still a niche action franchise.
Yeah.
And it skews a bit older than most action franchises. It's also always played better overseas than it has here. They've always, like, a lot, if you look at the last two that have come out, like, most of the money came from like overseas markets compared to the domestic front. Someone thought that Halo was going to shine on that. And I kind of did too. I thought like, Tom Cruise can do anything at this point now.
Well, I was shocked when last year when Top Gun came out, Maverick, and it was Cruise's first $100 million weekend movie. First weekend. I was like, this dude has been making 40 movies for 40 years, and this was his first freaking film that made $100 million. And I thought, again, shocked that these MI movies don't make more money because they're so freaking entertaining. Yeah. But let me ask you, when this strike is all down to greed, right? I mean, this is another instance of all these freaking companies, billionaires who are upon billionaires, just refusing to give just a mere slice of the pie to these people. And I'm talking about the people who are working for a living, who can't really working paycheck to paycheck. I'm not talking about Tom Cruise or Margot Robbie.
Making
all this money. I'm talking about the people who are boom mic and who are just assistants, writers, and all that. We're trying to make that living. And do you think when the streaming, this is another question, do you think when the streaming came out and people were like, shit, we can make more content, we have more opportunities for writers, for people of color, for more diversity, and then like there's a shitload of content, but now how do people make money? Because there's so much streaming stuff and people didn't probably put two and two together of saying, how do we, like the Nielsen ratings, it was always like, oh, we have 15 million viewers a week for Seinfeld,
right?
For Friends, like, oh, we get 30 minutes. Like, that's how they knew, but it was always kept a secret with Netflix. Like, we don't know. Oh, we don't know how many viewers are there.
And it's still being kept a secret for the most part. I mean, they, like, Netflix does a weekly thing now where they release like some viewership information, most of them are like, and I think that's, it's so weird that it's still not transparent. It's really like, usually you'll hear something from Hulu or Netflix or, you know, Max, now it used to be HBO Max, and they'll say that like, oh, like this was our most watched original movie ever on our platform, but they won't have any numbers to back it up. They're just almost like, take our word for it. When I've talked to like other writers about this kind of stuff, they're like there needs to be more transparency because there is money being made, which is why the biggest talking point with the strike for the actors and the writers is residuals from streaming services, because the way residuals worked out for network TV is a much different model from what they would do for streaming, especially when you say that billions of people are, you know, millions of stuff are watching your stuff in the first 7 days. They're like, okay, well, how does that reflect on me as someone who wrote it if it's getting replayed over and over and over again like that? And I remember when the writer strike first started, one of the first things they said was like, well, it's kind of a new business model and we really don't know like how lucrative it is, but you're spending like all this money on content and your CEOs are certainly getting paid a lot of money. So money's coming from somewhere. And like a writer doesn't even want, they don't even want a lot of it. Like, it's just like what they want is fair. And the fact that they're being so almost cartoonishly evil about it. Like, I don't know if you saw that Deadline article where Anomaly talked to a few execs and basically said that they don't really want to go to the negotiating table with them until the fall, because they feel like if they waited out, that the writers be like, oh, they might lose their apartments, they might lose this, like they might need to work so we can force
they
want to
starve them out. And first of all, that's fucking disgusting. And it rightfully angered many, and especially Ron Perlman. He has a great video where he responds to that. So if you haven't seen Ron Perlman be angry, he's like, he's livid towards that. And when you talk about Netflix, they're spending $200 million on movies. Like a Scorsese movie. They spent, I don't know how much money on The Rock and Ryan Reynolds. I mean, they spent billions of dollars on just a few movies. Right. And you're telling me you can't spare some money for the writers, for the shows that you're trying to make popular, not just your big movie stars.
I think what you're going to see too is, and you can kind of see it now on social media, how disgusted some people are when they hear about how much certain projects are to make and how much people are getting for projects. Like Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny was a $300 million movie. Fast 10 was a $340 million movie. That's before marketing costs. And then they released a story today that Dwayne Johnson allegedly got $50 million for that Red One, like Santa movie or Christmas movie that he's doing. So everyone's like, why in this day and age where you're struggling to pay your writers who just want a fair amount, that like these people are getting outrageous amounts of money just to star in something. And then also you're throwing $300 million plus at movies and then saying that you don't really have money to spare.
I saw an article that said they had 100 VFX artists working on the aging Harrison Ford. So you're paying 100 artists to de-age Harrison Ford. That's probably a lot of money. And so you don't have money for other stuff. I mean, so you're spending money on that, right? And I don't know how much Avatar will cost, but there has to be a way to get the cost down. When if you look at the 70s and 80s, people were making movies for like $7 million, $10 million. Yeah. And back then, I remember in the late 90s when I would hear people on interviews, oh, the movie costs $25 million. The interviewer was like, oh my God, $25 million. That's outrageous to make a movie. And look at us now, you spent $25 million on just the talent.
Yeah. And by the way, your movie can look great and not be expensive. I mean, Across the Spider-Verse was a $100 million movie. And it looks much more expensive than that. So you don't really have to spend $300 million plus on something. I mean, it becomes harder to justify spending that when the break-even point is so much harder to get to. Dial of Destiny is going to lose money for Disney. The Flash has lost money for Warner Brothers. And it's just
like a Black Adam, all those. Like when you think, look how crazy shit is now. Like movies now have to make $800 million to make a profit.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it should be like, oh, my movie made $100 million. Oh, that's awesome. They're like, no, not really, because we spent $200 million on marketing. So
yeah,
we have to.
It's the age we live in now too, where you can't hear like a $60 million opening and be like, oh, that was great. You know, you hear that now for certain movies. We're like, oh, that's not that good. Depending on the movie.
Yeah, back in the day, $100 million was like, wow, you are a movie star. Like if you have a movie that hits $100 million. That's it. You're made. But nowadays, it's just like, if this doesn't make, I just saw like Barbie tracking for 110 and Oppenheimer for 49. I go, but Nolan never gets box office. It's mostly, you know, cinephiles like us who go watch it. But I'm surprised it's not more. I'm surprised it's not tracking more than 49. Since people.
Well, I mean, it's rated R and it's 3 hours. I think that kind of has a lot. But a $49 million opening for a movie like that, I mean, I think that could be good. And if it has legs beyond the opening weekend, then that I think that'll be the case.
Yeah, I think that's a niche genre, because people, you have to like history. You have to like Nolan's style of filmmaking, and you have definitely... want to sit there for 3 hours plus because, you know, we need to watch 45 minutes of trailers.
Exactly. Yeah,
So,
exactly.
but I mean, I'm gonna watch Oppenheimer Thursday. I was trying to do the both of them on the same day, but the AMC that I go to, they were overlapping. So I had like Oppenheimer at 5, and then there's like three. I couldn't do both at the same day. So damn
I
it.
tried to swing a double feature, but I was like, it's too long, and I just split it up. Just split
Yeah, I'm doing Barbie on Friday night. So anyway,
Nice.
so
That's a good Friday night movie.
yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of people, you know, working actors on the strike. Don't you think the A-list actors who are making, you know, 8 figures should be up there as well, striking with everybody?
Well, I mean, I think some are, at least they claim to be. I mean, I saw some of them saying they're gonna go. I mean, I haven't seen like huge actors on the picket lines yet. I mean, I saw Kevin Bacon today, I believe. And but you're looking for like the Julia Robertses, the Brad Pitts, the
Yes, you know what would be amazing if the cast of MI7, Oppenheimer, and Barbie all show up to strike and be
that would
like,
be cool. Cause
that would be cool.
they can't because they can't promote their movies, they're not busy right now, so they should be
They
able to
have
do that.
time. I think most of them live down there. I mean, even if it's just for one day, but like, hey, let's
Yeah.
be together, you know, do the interviews with everybody and be like, this is BS. I know I make $30 million a film, but come on, let's give, you know, these poor schmucks some money.
Yeah. And I think that's the common misconception too, because the top tier actors who are in SAG make that much money that everyone assumes that every actor and even writer is rich. And the thing is,
No,
like,
yeah.
most people who are in that are not rich because everyone is not Brad Pitt or Sandra Bullock or Matt Damon. A working actor day to day is not making that much money, which is why, I see it so much online too, where people are like, oh, they should stop complaining, don't they make enough money? And it's not,
No.
someone sent me a message saying, like, do you know that some, even in the case of writers, there are writers who have written for some of the most popular TV shows re recently that are struggling to pay their rent. And that shouldn't be the case.
I forgot the name of the actress, but she was in Orange Is the New Black, and I saw something that she was getting like $20 for residual checks.
Residuals.
And it's just like, I mean, but it is so much different than back in the day with the original sitcoms and network, when you
Right.
had the goal for a sitcom was to reach 100 episodes. That was your benchmark, because then you
You can
can go
sell it
into
into syndication.
syndication
Yeah.
and you can get more money. And then if you hit the 200 episodes, that's amazing. We need to figure out a way for these actors to make the same amount of money, because let's say they cancel something and you're like, okay, this is a, let's say Stranger Things. And if you're like one of those actors who's a regular on Stranger Things, but you're not the star, you're like, okay, this is one of the biggest shows of all time, and I'm
Right.
not making any money.
Yeah.
And, you know, Millie Bobby Brown is, you know, I'm not gonna shit on her, but I'm just saying, like, we
Yeah,
should be
no.
able to also make a living out of this,
Make
because, you
money.
know, we're
Yeah.
entertaining you the just as much.
Exactly. No, I agree. They are also fighting for the little guy within SAG too. I mean, even though I would love, like you said, to see bigger actors like on the picket lines with them, like actually, kind of pounding the pavement. This is more so for, people who aren't making those kind of paychecks. And and then also the AI thing is scary too. I mean, like
Yes.
the when I saw that one of the things that they wanted them to negotiate on was the fact that like I could be a background actor and get paid for the day, but then you can scan my likeness and then reuse my likeness in another project, so you don't have to pay me for a said project. Like you just use it for whenever you want to. And they were like that. And then that I love that they were saying like that was the groundbreaking stuff, some of the stuff they offered us as like a groundbreaking deal that we turned down. Like, no, like you can't be able to scan my likeness and then
No.
use it whenever you feel like it. And then so you don't have to pay me
It's kind of
for
like a video game. You know how in video games they would do that to athletes, and it was frowned upon to, like, that's why there's not college games anymore for like PS, for PlayStation or Xbox,
Right.
because you can't use the likeness of a college
Yeah.
player. Of course they would think about doing that. That's just another way to not spend any money.
Yep.
You know, it's just, oh my God.
Yeah, it's
World, the
frustrating.
world's not right. Yeah.
And to hear like Bob Iger's comments when they interviewed him saying this is like a really bad time for them to want to like strike, and it's almost like inconvenient because of like what we've just come out of with like the pandemic and Hollywood is like trying to come back. But I was like, that's a real, real funny thing for you to say because you make a lot of money a year. Yeah. So it's easy for you to be like, oh, it's very inconvenient.
It's easy to say suck it up when you're making, I think, reportedly $27 million a year.
Yeah.
And he's probably worth way more. That's just what he makes a year. He's probably has way more than $100 million in the bank. Yep. Let's change the topic really quick. Just for a few short moments, I wanted to ask you about the Emmy nominations that came out. And, well, Emmys that we'll see probably in 2024, depending on when this strike is going to end. So there's one particular category that I wanted to hear your take on, because out of the 8 nominees, they all come from 2 shows, White Lotus and Succession, which, look, I love Succession. I think it's one of the greatest TV shows of all time. I think the final season was incredible. Yeah. But I do not think, and I love Alan Ruck, and Skarsgård does a good job. I do not think Skarsgård was technically a supporting actor because he only came out in like a few episodes. And I think that's more of a guest
actor
role. And Alan Ruck was maybe in a few more episodes than him, but I don't think it was enough to garner said nomination. Now, Matthew McFadden, yes. Nicholas Braun, yes. And I have not seen White Lotus season 2. I was lukewarm with season 1, so that's why I haven't really started season 2.
Season 2 is so much better.
I do want to watch it because I know I love F. Murray Abraham. I want to see Michael there from Sopranos. So I'm excited to see. But did you watch Succession season 4?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. What do you think about this category? Do you think it's not fair for other shows? I mean, it's kind of ridiculous to see just 2 shows in one category.
I don't think it's entirely fair. I've watched both shows and the acting on both shows is very good. To say that like no one else was deserving from another show to like sneak into this category, like at least one other show other than White Lotus or Succession, is kind of like, you know, I guess not an insult, but it's like, you know, I understand what people say, like maybe open up and maybe make it appear that you're watching other shows.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like you're paying favorites. Like you almost see it a little bit in the supporting actress category, if not for Rhea Seahorn for Better Call Saul and Elizabeth Debicki for The Crown. That category is filled with people from White Lotus and one from Succession. So like it's in the supporting actress category as well. And I mean, the lead actor has 3 lead actors from Succession out of the, you know, 5. So it's like,
and that's another bone I need to pick, because like I said, Brian Cox is awesome, but I don't want to spoil it for people. 2 episodes. Yeah.
Can't go lead. I mean, I guess he would be in the supporting if he did one. I mean, but I guess it's
because all politics if it was season 1 through 3, yes, definitely lead actor. But here's the thing. I love all these guys in this category, but I need to have Bob Odenkirk just win one, goddamn it.
That's what a lot of people
think he will, and it's gonna pain me because this man has given almost gave his life for the show. He had a heart attack. He's an incredible actor. He's amazing in Breaking Bad, and this last season he was basically playing 3 different Sauls in one season, and I just want him to win one. And it's a shame that they haven't even won one fucking Emmy. When you look at the production of the show, you're like, this is next level TV stuff. I mean, it looks like a feature film production when you look at the episodes.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are some people that think in this kind of category like this with Best Actor that the 3 in Succession people might like cancel each other out. And then you have like a kind of like a person that sneaks in and wins it, which could be Bob Odenkirk, or, you know, a surprise would be like Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges comes out of nowhere.
Because he's a vet, you know, everyone likes, you know, he's been in the game for a long time. So like, give it to him. Pascal is a long shot. I think the nomination was a win for him, though. I mean, I still think one of the Succession guys might get it. I don't think it should be Brian Cox, because he certainly wasn't a lead this season. Karen Culkin and Jeremy were both very good, though.
For those 2, I would give the slight edge to Kieran. He was different from the first 3 seasons. The first 3 seasons, he was, you know, Roman, like the disgusting person he is. But this one, he had to show his grief, in more layers, his pain, the emotion, all that. He did it all. And I think that was very impressive to do that with Jeremy Strong as your other lead. And Sarah Smith.
Jeremy Strong is very. I mean, in her category, I think she's got it.
Again, here's stuff, another
some
one.
Some stuff she did this season where I was like, all right, that just give it to her. But I mean, we'll see.
When I see her, I think about Rhea Seahorn, and there's a moment in Better Call Saul where she's sitting on a bus,
mm-hmm.
and she starts breaking down, and I've never seen a scene like that with somebody crying, and you can feel, like, I felt it was real. I hope Rhea gets it, because she's been with Bob Odenkirk. I think they're like neck and neck to me of why that show works so well, man. Mm-hmm. It would be amazing if they both won, but I think Succession is gonna sweep. I just have that feeling.
I mean, I think it's definitely winning best drama series. And then all these other the acting categories that it's in, I think someone from their show is going to win.
But here's the one that I started laughing when I saw, and I go, okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi for limited series. Like, who, what is that? Is that a joke? Is that supposed to be a prank or something, like April Fool's? Or
the only positive I could take from that isn't even for the show itself. I did love seeing a lot of genre shows that were like represented in some of these categories, like best drama series. You have Andor, another Star Wars show, The Last of Us, House of the Dragon. A long time ago, you wouldn't see a ton of genre shows being nominated for top awards like that. I'm throwing Obi-Wan in there. I mean, I don't think it deserves to be there, but you know, it's cool, I guess, for like, you know, I'm sure there's someone out there that's like, yeah, representing for like the sci-fi. You know,
yeah, I love seeing Andor in the drama. I know it's not going to win, it's a long shot, but I thought it was an amazing, amazing series for Disney Plus and for Star Wars. Like, I'll champion it. I'll be like, it's for me, I better than Mandalorian, the best Star Wars since, I don't know, Empire. I just love how detailed it was, and I love seeing that it got a nomination. Yeah. But here's the thing that I always find funny, and let's see if you do too. So Barry the Bear and Wednesday in the comedy.
The bear is not a comedy.
Barry, I don't think, has made me. It's an incredible show, but and there's moments that make you chuckle.
Yeah,
because you're like, oh my god, this is so ridiculous, the violence and all that. But it's not like ha 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 comedy.
And Wednesday is, well, Wednesday shouldn't even be there. I mean, I figured that Jenna Ortega was going to get nominated because she's like the moment right now.
Yeah,
and she is good on the show. She nailed the part pretty well. I thought she would get a nomination, but when I saw the show itself get a nomination, I was like, oh. And those shows towed the line of being a comedy. Like, back in the day, Desperate Housewives used to have this problem because it was always nominated in the comedy category. And while there was some dark humor there, it wasn't a full-fledged like comedy in the sense that some of these other shows are.
Yeah.
So it's a really, you know, it's a really fine line to call. Particularly the bear is not a comedy, but whatever. I've been like tripping on that for like ever since I've heard this. I was like, when are you guys laughing when you're watching it? I mean, maybe
like nervous humor, nervous laughter. I don't get it. Like, what the hell's going on here?
Exactly.
But, I when you have the comedy actor category and you have Martin Shore, okay, that's a comedy actor. And then you have Bill Hader. And then you have Jeremy Allen White. And I'm like, why? That doesn't make sense. And then you have Jason Sudeikis. And if you look at that, you say, okay, who's the best actor of that? I mean, the Bear season 2 is insane. And you probably have to give it to Jeremy Allen White. Yeah. But then you look at, you know, Martin Short and Jason Sudeikis. And they're like, well, we were in actual comedies.
Yep. Yeah, no, that made you laugh. Shrinking, so. Ted Lasso, Only Murders in the Building. I always feel bad for Only Murders in the Building too, because in a less competitive TV landscape, it'd be winning a lot more comedy awards because it's a really solid.
It's very. I haven't seen season 3 yet, but I really enjoyed the first season and a half. After finish the second season, the nominations that make me happy is Daniel Radcliffe for Weird Al.
That one made me happy too. It's really. Pretty deserving too. He was really good.
The movie is so fun. It's so it's so Weird Al.
Yeah.
Like, it's perfect. And I love how Weird Al has a freaking cameo playing a person who's like, So you wanna play music? And like he's like shitting on his own thing. I thought that was hilarious.
I like seeing that. I like seeing, like I said, Abbott Elementary. I think it's really like a funny. There's not a lot of good network TV on it, but Abbott Elementary is hilarious. And a lot of their cast got represented too, and it got nominated for Best Comedy Series. So I like seeing that.
The
Some
one,
of
actually, the one lead actor limited series movie is the one that's intriguing because I still haven't seen Blackbird, Taron Egerton. I haven't
I haven't seen that either.
seen.
I heard that's good too. I actually just recently saw something about that story on like a random like true crime channel and didn't realize it was that until they started talking about it towards the end of the episode that that was based on that. I was like, oh fuck, now I want to watch it.
And then I see Welcome to Chippendales, Welcome All. I haven't seen that, and I heard good things about it. And George and Tammy, I haven't seen, and then just Steven Yeun. I'm pretty sure they're probably gonna give it to Steven.
There could be some love for Dahmer because Evan Peters won Golden Globe, I believe, last year for this. Well, it's
Okay.
also pretty controversial though, because a lot of people think it's, a
Yeah,
lot of people
fair.
are. I mean, I love a good Ryan Murphy true crime limited series, so I think that's
Yeah.
the one thing that he does well and doesn't really fuck up.
Yeah,
I
I
can
know what
see
you get. A
why.
lot of people are like, why are we giving the spotlight to these criminals, these freaking people
And
who
he's
I
doing the
get it.
Menendez brothers next, so for the next one.
Yeah, that's great. I remember when that came out when I was like 15, 16, and I'm like, what the hell? But anyway, Gaius, I wanted to do something new with you here as a guest and put you under the real spotlight and ask you a few questions here and just whatever pops up in your head, just let it flow. All right, question one. In a biopic, who would you have directing and starring as yourself?
Because he's one of my favorite directors, but I don't know what direction this would go in. I would have David Fincher direct it. It might be pretty dark.
Yes.
And who would I have play myself? You know what? We don't look alike. We're not even the same, but just so I could say it, I'll just go with Michael B. Jordan.
There you go. I mean, this is the movies. You could pick whoever you want.
I'll take it.
This is going to be a hard one, and take 10 seconds if you need. Favorite film and TV show of the last 5 years?
I will for a TV show, I'll give it to Succession just because I think it was really well written and well acted for the most part. So like, its entire duration. And I also, even though I think it could have maybe gone on one more season, I respect any show that knows when to bow out and say,
Yes.
like, this is it. That's done.
I was bummed about only 4 seasons, but when you think about it, there's nothing that needed to be said on screen. We could just, think about it ourselves, and they probably would have dragged on too much with the it would have been boring and redundant for season 5 because it would have been just fighting over, who's and we don't want to see that.
And a lot of people, a lot of the cast were split because some of them, Brian Cox felt he maybe could go in another year. And then some of the other cast were like, no, I think this might be the right time.
Yeah.
I would also be hard if I was on a show like that. I would be like, no, keep it going, man. I'm good. As far as movie, it's just because it just popped into my head. I really liked Cha-Cha Real Smooth because I really like a coming of age movie. Dakota Johnson's in it.
Yeah,
And
that was pretty good.
I really. And I thought Cooper Rafe did a really good job with writing and starring in it. And there were parts of it that kind of hit me like in the feels a little bit, and I wasn't expecting it to.
Yeah.
I like movies that kind of come out of nowhere, and that one came out of nowhere because I really wasn't expecting much or a lot. And when I first watched it, I was kind of like left pretty enamored by it. I thought it was really good.
That's what I had with the Rye Lane and the Are You There, Margaret? Just so feel good. It's like a nice big warm hug of cinema. It was just like you leave the theater feeling good and you're like, oh, okay, that was good. Like you don't leave the theater like, oh,
You feel
fuck, that shit
happy.
was
You're
fucked up. Watching some
Exactly.
thriller or horror movie. All right, so third question. It's your last day on Earth. What's your last thing that you're eating?
I would have like a good like ribeye steak. Really partial to
How many ounces? We're talking 24.
that. I should go out. I'll go all out. It's my
Go
last
all
day on
out
Earth.
32.
It's all out, man.
Like, I don't care if I have a stomach ache, whatever.
I'm gonna have a stomach ache. It's my last day on Earth, man. Might as well enjoy it.
What do you put
You know what's
on it?
fun?
Like, what do you put on? Do you put anything on the steak? You're like, no, the meat has to
No, if it's seasoned really well, you don't need anything on it.
Yeah,
That's like
exactly.
that's the funny thing about working at a restaurant sometimes is that they'll get like this really, really fucking great steak, and they get it cooked right, and then they're like, "Oh, can I get some A1?" You're like, "Oh, they're gonna like just drown it in A1." So
You're
all
like,
right,
oh my.
whatever. You're paying
Hey.
for
Yeah, it's your
it.
money. Go do what you want. Any sides with that?
Pretty basic when it comes either like really good baked potato with like sour cream and butter and chives. And broccoli. I'm really partial to broccoli. I like veggies like that.
So
If not broccoli, it'd be asparagus or broccoli, wouldn't it?
what are you going to wash it down with? Hard-hitting questions here, guys.
What am I gonna wash it down with? You know what's crazy? Like normally you would pair that with a good glass of wine, but I don't really drink wine a lot. I only do it when I have to. I don't know, ice cold like beer would be really good. Allagash White.
All right, so next one is just a random fucking question. I just thought of it and I wrote it. I'm like, okay, if music played every time you walked in a room, what's the song that's going to be playing?
We'll go with September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. I'll
All
walk into that. I want to walk into the jam.
right, so last
Okay.
question is an easy one, but if you say yes, I might have to just delete this recording.
Oh
Pineapples on pizza.
no, I hate that.
Okay.
I hate Hawaiian pizza.
Okay. That
But
is the.
I thought I was in the minority. I because like I know a lot of people that love it, and I just think it's a weird
Oh,
thing to
the
do.
person in the other room who is my wife loves it.
I loves
And
it.
it's
Oh.
just like, oh, but you chose wisely.
Thank you so much.
So yes, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for like dropping your knowledge on the strike, on the Emmys. I really appreciate you coming on. Tell the peeps where they can find you on the World Wide Web.
Oh God. So if you want, you can follow me on Instagram at G Reels. It's G underscore REELZ. You can always find you always also find me under the same handle on Twitter if you're on Twitter as well. You can also check out myself, Jackson, and Owen every other week on the Back to the Blockbuster podcast, wherever you get your podcast. And then look out for some feature pieces from me on MovieWeb and some news editor stuff on CBR, Comic Book Resources. And I also do some opinion pieces for guyatthemovies.com as well. So there's a lot of different places you can find me, but yeah, love to connect with other cinephiles and talk movies like big old nerds. I can do it all day.
Thank you so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Real Spotlight. It would be greatly appreciated if you save, download, follow the pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or whichever app you use to listen to your podcast. To follow the podcast on Instagram, go to the_real_spotlight. There in the bio is all the info for all the socials. I do host another podcast with the Arab Khaleesi called Dancing with Dragons, where we talk all things Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon. So if you're a fan of the book and shows, feel free to listen. Thanks again for stopping by The Real Spotlight, and until next time, peace out.